Internet, and welcome to the 12th episode of Old Geek, Young Geek, the Dirty Baker's Dozen, as I'm going to call it.
Hey, Scott, a Baker's Scott Dozen is 13.
What?
Baker's Dozen's 13.
Oh, my goodness.
it's literally just a regular dozen. Right.
Just a regular dozen.
You could just call it...
We could call it the Dirty Dozen. Come on, that'd be awesome.
We could just, like, shorten it and call it, like, a doze.
I'm Scott Pell, the young geek,
and I'm Steve Johnson, clearly the old geek.
And today we have a special guest, and I'll let her introduce herself.
Oh, hi. My name is Virginia Anson Gruber. I'm a freelance producer. I'm a comedian. And I am a production coordinator, and I am Scott Pell's future sister-in-law.
Yeah.
Yay, what? Family.
Yay.
Pulling far from that tree.
Last time I had a guest on the show, it was my own brother, so I decided to reach outside the family just a little bit and ask his girlfriend if he'd like to be on, if she'd be like.
Excuse me, I'm his Beyonce now. I am his Beyonce now.
Beyonce.
I found saying that is a lot less awkward than saying fiance, because that's the most awkward word in the English language.
No, I got a worse one. Right. You ready? This is Carol. She's my lover.
You sound like you would be like in an SNL sketch with like Will Ferrell, like. Like, what was that? The Welsh Liams with like the spiced meats and stuff. That was the best. Sorry, tangent. Sorry, guys.
That's okay. That's fine. We'll be doing a lot of that today.
No, you know what might even be worse. Okay, ready? Worse. This is Bob. He's my partner.
And then you have to do like the.
Your partner in crime. He's your partner in a sort of business venture. Oh, he's your partner.
Business of love. Yeah.
We need better descriptors.
I think that's what prostitutes probably put on their W-2s. Is like,
you know what I go with?
Business of love.
I go, this is my old lady.
Oh, I'm sure she loves that.
I've never in my life.
I was going to say, I bet she loves that.
I have yet to actually just like mention what the topic of the show is. Because it keeps on getting interrupted.
Pronouns for people in marital relationships.
Yeah, no. Whatever. No. But yeah, so we're going to go on a lot of tangents today because we're talking about fandoms and fanboys and fangirls and like just the passion that they have. And whether that's good, whether that's bad, we'll talk about it all. So, but before we get to that, let's talk about the news. So the first thing that was really big to me in the news this week was the announcement of the Nintendo World Championships. It's coming back all the way from 1990 to be resurrected at E3 2015. So back in 1990, Nintendo had a special World Championships where people from all around the country would come and compete to win a special NES cartridge, I guess, and a cash prize. And that NES cartridge was like this pack full of three games, which was Super Mario Brothers, Rad Racer, and Tetris. Each of these games had specific objectives for the championship. So in Super Mario, you would have to collect 50 coins as quickly as possible. In Rad Racer, you'd have to complete a lap around the circuit. And in Tetris, you'd have to complete as many lines as possible. All the scores would be tallied up, and whoever had the highest score would win the championship. So that's coming back. I'm sure that they'll be using newer games for their championship and tournament and such. But I think that this is a great idea because Nintendo did a similar thing last year at E3, which was the Super Smash Bros. Tournament. They had Super Smash Bros. Like pro players come to Los Angeles.
Oh, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Scott, but that is thunder. We never get thunder. Are you hearing thunder?
It was raining today in Santa Monica, and I opened the window at my office. It was like the Shawshank Redemption, I swear to God.
Crazy.
I was so excited.
Storm.
I was so excited.
Anyhow, news time.
Sorry about that. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but it's so rare. It's so, I know it's not, for other places have weather, but we don't.
Yeah,
so.
Scott, you have to understand, rain for us, it really is. Like, I was Tim Robbins today. Like, it was just, it was incredible. Like, the birds were singing. We don't even have birds in LA.
No. No birds, no weather. It's a hellscape, I would say.
But, yeah. So last year Nintendo did a thing where they did a thing. They had Super Smash Brothers professional players come. It was really exciting. I enjoyed it. I'll be looking forward to watching this again, probably live, because I'll be there at E3.
You will.
I'm really excited. I'm really excited about that. So I'll drop in. Steve, I think that you should compete since they might be playing like that old NES cartridge. And
I don't think I will. And you know, if they're playing Blades of Steel, I would totally be into it. But
there
know,
we go. That might be. Blades of Steel that might be there. That might be there. You know, what if they did?
Oh, that
you
would be...
and you and
oh yeah, Mike and I. Lonzo. We still have never. We haven't settled our rivalry, which we promised that
still,
we would.
You
but
still
we
have that
not.
Challenge. You still have that challenge that was issued. So I think that you should follow through on that at E3.
Yeah.
Showcase.
Oh, it'll be the biggest news there.
Oh yeah, for sure. Two old guys duking it out on an NES.
Two old broken down jerks.
Winner takes all.
Nintendo game.
I mean, I think that's what the world needs more of at conventions, right? Is just like old guys trying to reclaim video game glory. Like, there's not enough of that, right? Like,
no, clearly there isn't.
Let's give the people what they want.
And clearly, the people want to see old guys.
Well, it's not like they're going to wrestle or something, you know? Like the dudes that are going to be in those tournaments, like, and this is no offense to any of the dudes or ladies that will be in those tournaments, but I'm just probably making a general statement. Like, those guys probably aren't going to be in any sort of, like, running tournament, you know? Like, they're probably going to just
not
be,
the same
you know? Like, they could probably, yeah. Like... For comparison, I would also never be in a running tournament, so that is just, you know, what I don't know. I think that that's cool. Like, I'm excited because I think Nintendo holds that nostalgic sort of value for people. I think that especially we talked about it yesterday because for the one person that was streaming yesterday, we actually streamed, and I unfortunately had a recording issue, so this is a rehash, but what we kind of hit on yesterday was just that... that nostalgia is cool, and you had a point where Nintendo sort of has been using the same characters over and over again, whereas other sort of game companies like branched out, right? That's sort of what you had hit on, like. And I think I in that I agree with you. I like it because I feel like I've grown with these characters as each new game has come out, sort of. And so I think it's cool because you can probably. This tournament will have new games, but Scott, did it say if they're going to do any like old games as like a throwback at all, or any sort of like other side tournaments within the tournament, or is it going to be only new games?
So far, from the research that I've done, very little information has been released.
Excellent.
So I don't know. I don't know of what games will be played or what games will be showcased, but the fact is that it's happening, and that's pretty exciting.
That's
you know,
pretty
I know
cool.
Gambling on this kind of thing is illegal. But I want to give everybody a pick. You ready? Here's who I picked to win. Fred Savage.
Yes.
The Wizard.
Fred Savage, the Wizard.
He's
and the original Nintendo World Championships were said to be inspired by the Wizard, which was based on a tournament of the same nature, but they were playing Super Mario Bros. 3, which isn't really a competitive game in any sort of way, except for like the battle thing, but that's not what they were playing, I think. Haven't seen the movie because I have hurt my eyes from terrible things.
The Wizard was from that awesome time in popular culture where the entertainment industry hadn't figured out how to make movies be commercials, but have them not look like they're commercials.
Yeah, it just looked like a long form, like literally commercial that you would watch like in between Saturday morning cartoons and stuff.
It is a long form commercial for Nintendo.
Yeah.
And it's like it has like this sort of innocence to its cynicism. Like it's a more innocent form of cynicism than we have now, I would say, in that film. Because you can tell that it's a commercial. Where nowadays I think people don't know
it. Yeah, we try to like hide it and make it amazing.
And they're good at hiding it. Like they're so good at hiding it.
Unless
like this
unless
is a commercial, nobody knows. But this is a commercial for that apron in the background of your shot.
Hey,
like that's why we
that
did this
one
whole...
right there. You can get it in a lot of different colors. Please check out the Twitch Svetterick page. There's probably going to be a link later. No, the only movie that I think is horrible at it is The Island by Michael Bay. But I just have like such a vendetta about that because it is just one giant billboard for things.
That is your least favorite movie, I take it.
Of all time. Literally, I can't, and there are a lot of terrible movies, so that's pretty high up there. No, I have such a sore spot for that particular filmmaking genre, I think. I mean, no offense to every one person that's watching that may like Transformers and stuff, but...
Wah, wah.
Anyway, I don't know. What? How did we get talking about this? We should, well, Scott, moderate us back.
It's an interesting thing that would come up, the worst movie that you've ever seen, because in the last podcast that we did when we recorded it last night, one of the awesome topics of conversation that I thought was amazing was we talked about the great television show MST3K, which was based on bad movies.
Yes, that sort of.
But not Michael Bay bad.
No, not Michael Bay bad. More
so let's,
like
let's
actually.
Let's use that as our segue into today's topic: fandoms. The reason that we have Virginia on this show, even though she plays games. She plays games, but that's not really her thing. You play games.
Occasionally,
because we shorten things because we're trendy, like the dirty does that we are.
The cage.
We have you on the show because you were so ecstatic to just come on the show and just geek out about Mystery Science Theater 3000 and other things that you were just really excited about because you were very passionate and energetic and just enthusiastic person.
I am just a personified beam of sunshine. But no, I do. I'm a super fan for Mystery Science Theater 3000. And so when you sort of were posting the blog or the podcast topic about fandom, I felt like I kind of actually had a lot to contribute because pretty recently I got to have my like fandom interaction with two of the main guys from the show. I was really excited. For those who, by the way, have not either seen or heard of Mystery Science Theater 3000, it was a show that was created by a guy named Joel Hodgson. And in 1988, basically, it started on a public access show as like a public access show in like, I want to say it's like Minnesota. And it was a KTMA was the station. And then it got picked up by Comedy Central and then moved to Sci-Fi Channel. So it actually ran for like 10 years. And the whole premise was just that this guy, well, it was originally Joel and then moved to Mike. But basically, he worked for this company and they, as a test, shot him into space and put him on this spaceship. And to sort of break his will, they try to send him terrible movies because they feel like if they can figure out a way that this will break the will of humans, they'll have something, basically. And so,
it is the most preposterous,
just the most
awesome premise
just,
ever.
Yes, they literally just were like, we're going to do this. And even in the theme song, they literally say, like, part of the lines are, you should really just relax because you're like wondering how he eats and breathes and other science facts. It's like very, they literally just like, just go with it that it's a dude in space with puppets and they're going to make fun of these movies to sort of get through the minutiae and that sort of, you know, whatever they're trying to, you know, get at with controlling them. And, you know, through the seasons, there's like other villains and characters that come in. But the people that I met was a guy named Frank Conniff, and then the other gentleman was named Trace Below, and they were the original Mads. Actually, fun fact, they weren't the original Mads. TV Frank was actually the second sidekick, because the first sidekick was a fella named J. Elvis Weinstein, who was actually one of the original writers and puppeteers from the KTMA episodes. But after the first season, I believe he was on just the public access one, and then they switched it over to TV Frank. So
is he like Pete Best in the Beatles?
Is that a reference I should understand?
Well,
probably.
Yeah,
well, yeah. Was that, was
the
that
Beatles, the Beatles?
Yes, the Beatles.
The Beatles.
I've heard of them,
but they had a drummer whose name was Pete Best.
And then he got replaced
by Ringo.
And
then they just kind of said, yeah, we don't like you, Pete Best. We like this guy Ringo instead. And
yeah.
So he spends the rest of his life as as Pete Best, the guy who didn't get to be one of the Beatles.
I think,
even though, you know, Ringo's no great drummer or anything. So Pete Best would have done fine, I'm sure.
But he gets the ladies, and that's the point.
Ringo? Sure.
His name is Ringo. That's why I like him.
With a name like
Ringo's,
that.
I mean, that's a cool name. Like,
yeah,
you don't get much cooler than Ringo.
To correct my previous statement, the first sidekick who, the character, his name was actually Lawrence Earhart, Larry Earhart. He was actually on until the first season, but mid-first season is actually when Frank switched over. But those are the guys that I met. I was at Pensacola Comic Con. Hey to everybody at Pensacola Comic Con. Yeah, very nice. The coolest. For those who have never been to a convention, though, one of the things I mentioned yesterday was how I was super nervous and, you know, didn't. You don't want to be that person, right? Ever. You don't want to be that guy. But conventions are sort of a safe space where it's sort of set up that way. Like, there's a transaction that everyone sort of knows is going to happen. Like, I am here because you really like this thing that I've been in. You have come and dressed up in something amazing to come and celebrate this. So there's, you know, they're not just like grocery shopping and you're bothering them. You know, there's a very clear like line of, this is okay, but I still was very much going to throw up on them because I was just so nervous that, like, because I couldn't breathe. I mean, I've been a fan of this show since I was literally a child with my sister watching it. You know, we would, because when it moved over to Sci-Fi Channel, it was playing on Saturday mornings. So it was like a block of like two episodes back to back. And so we would watch Saturday morning cartoons and then we would switch over to Mystery Science Theater. And the great thing for all of those who don't know about it is that it is such a show that like kids can watch it and there's like those very obvious pun jokes, but then you go back and watch it as you get older and you realize that there are layers of references and inside jokes and sort of to all these amazing things. And sometimes even like little tiny, like wisps of like a dirty joke or like a funny, like off color joke, but you're old enough now to get it, but it was never something that would have been obvious enough to be offensive as a kid. And that's something I really liked because hearing them in the panel, that was something that they really, when they were screening, like cared about. They cared about making sure that it was something that everyone could watch and wasn't, you know, excess violence or, you know, nudity or swearing or anything like that. And I don't know, it's just a great show. And so they're such great guys. I don't know. Trace now is on a new show that Paul Feig has created on Yahoo, and it's called Other Space. And for those who haven't seen it, I totally encourage you to check it out. It's hilarious. Paul Feig wrote and directed Bridesmaids. He's doing the new Melissa McCarthy movie Spy. If you've seen the billboards out, he's done a ton of stuff. I literally just didn't even name anything, but that's like two things.
Very well-known guy.
Yeah, pretty solid. Yeah,
it's kind of a big deal, just saying.
Also, super nice guy, because I actually, this is digging way deep into the fandom vault here, okay. But I tweeted at Paul Feig when I was watching Other Space, because in an episode of Other Space, there's a character who is Amish, and there's a very well-known Mystery Science Theater movie called Manos, The Hands of Fate. Probably
sure,
the most famous one. So there's a character in there who's like the sort of henchman, and his name is Torgo. And so this Amish character in Other Space is dressed very similarly to Torgo. And so I actually tweeted at Paul and was just like, hey, love the show. It's really great for all of us Misty fans. Like, but question, is this character like a reference to Torgo? And he tweeted back at me and he was like, oh, dang. He is now just missing like the creepy walking music and like creaky knees. Like, he was so cool to be very involved like that with the show because he's a fan of the show. So that was great because that's the one thing I think that this community of fans, I mean, at Pensacon, they, to be honest, didn't even fill the ballroom because it's not like we're in droves, but this community is so open and the guys are so great that it just, everyone's so nice and just very warm and Midwestern and, I don't know. It's a great show to, I think, be such a good fan of because I feel like these kind of people deserve super fans in a way, you know?
Totally. Mystery Science Theater 3000 for me was also another show that I would watch, like, growing up on Saturday mornings. Like, I didn't really watch Saturday morning cartoons, but I did watch that.
Yeah.
I did watch Mystery Science Theater 3000, and I loved Crow, and I really haven't... I really haven't delved into, you know, as deep as you have. also, we've lost a video on.
I did Steve see Carlson. That. I hope he's all right.
I hope he's okay. So my Twitch stream
is just the two of us now.
It's just the two of us, but yeah. So fans like you're obviously a fan of Mystery Science Theater 3000. Like, you know beyond the show, you know, like, the staff, you know, the writers, the characters, the actors who play them, and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I think that's, like, a true sign of, like, fandom. I think, like, when you're a fan, like, when you're a nerd, like, you know everything about, like, one thing because, like, you love it so much. Like, you are just so passionate, so involved
yeah.
in whatever it is that you are just...
You live for it, basically.
You have to consume everything that's available that is related to whatever that is.
Yeah, no, totally. I think it's actually one of those things that for when you love something so passionately, maybe it becomes a thing that you actually just do instinctively. You know, like, I don't even realize until I'm, like, rambling about it sometimes how much I've just said or talked about. And it's one of those things that, I don't know, I like it, but... You do. You have those moments, and I think probably every super fan can kind of relate, where you have those moments of just self-consciousness, kind of, because... Yeah.
It's that point of where, like, we are, you know, where you're just rambling about something that you're really passionate about, and you just stop and say, like, oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Yeah, like, oh, I just, like, totally word vomited all over you. I apologize.
Yeah, and that's fine. You can do that, because I love it when people do that. I love it when people do that. Oh, Steve Johnson is having some technical difficulties here, but I'm going to keep on rolling with this. I'm just going to try and re-edit some things. Yep, things are happening, but we're technical difficulties. We're gonna power through this, people. So let's keep going. Let's keep going here, because...
Well, I can keep talking about Mystery Science Theater. There you go.
Yeah.
Hey.
Steve Johnson is back.
Excellent. Back and better than ever. Well, it's perfect. We're working out a little technical difficulties with the video, but while Scott's doing that, I can segue and keep talking more about whatever you guys want.
Yeah.
Oh, I know. It was such a great moment, though. Can I say that if for whatever reason Paul Feig does hear this, thank you for that moment, because to be able to connect with not only, like, the creator of a lot of other things that I admire, to be able to connect with someone in the moment like that, that is really one of the best parts about fandom, I think, is, like, that for me was the best night, because I'm watching Other Space. I'm loving it. I'm seeing these comparisons to the other show. I'm sort of, you know, pulling out the most Crow T robot joke that Art, the other robot that's also played by Trace Below, you know, says, which I'll repeat again. I said it yesterday, but it's, you know, Art, the robot, wants bathroom privileges. And one of the commanders says, "What the hell are you going to do in the bathroom?" And he says, "What does anyone do? Clog, unclog, live." And it's just... It was great because you have these moments where, as a fan of something that you even know the writing style of, you know, it was great to be able to pull these moments of flashes of other characters and pull it back and feel that warmth, and then to be able to tweet in that moment and sort of, you know, have that interaction immediately, because it wasn't even like he waited a long time. It was like a couple minutes because he was just, like, on Twitter. I caught him at the right time. So it was perfect. And I don't know. It was great because then that even progressed more, because now in my mind I have this idea that maybe in season 2 he will put a Mystery Science Theater Easter egg that specifically is Torgo related. And then what if, you know, 6 or 8 months from now we're talking again and I can go back to it? I mean, that's what fandom does, I think, because it's an engaged, it's a relationship both ways. I think if you're a fan of something that's worthy of being a fan of, I guess. Yeah. You know, it's a two-way relationship, I think, because the people who...
I love the fact that now we have the capacity or the ability to instantly communicate with the people that make the things that we like. My New Year's resolution was, if I see something that I like, I'm going to find that person on Twitter and send them a tweet that says, "Hey, I really like that thing that you did."
That's really cool. Yeah.
And it's great. Every single person has said, "Hey, thanks a lot."
Yeah.
It's just like a great thing. I'm like I was watching some movie that I got on one of those movie packs, those DVD packs, where it's like 10 movies for like $3 or something.
Yeah.
And they're movies that you've never heard of. And it was this completely, utterly terrible movie. But there was one actress in it who was hysterically funny. And she was like great. And I was like, well, she's so funny. What is she doing in this thing? So she had like 15 followers on Twitter. And I remember it. I was like, you were so funny. And she was like, oh my God, I can't believe anybody ever saw that. And I was like, yeah.
See, that's so amazing, because I think, aside from the fact that, you know, there's the affirmation part, sort of one of the things that I feel like we're going roundabout of things that we talked about yesterday, but I think it goes back to the thing that, like, when you make something as an artist of any kind, I feel like your probably general intention is to have it be consumed in some way by other people, you know, whether it's visually taking it in, you know, audibly taking it in, aesthetically, you want them to consume it. So to have that sort of visceral response from someone, probably even especially for people who have a limited or smaller than normal fan base, you know, like, I think it, there's such a special relationship because they understand that it's a real, like, you had hit on a topic yesterday, Stephen, where you were at a convention and you were in the wrong room, but you ended up sticking around. And yeah. Yeah.
I'd never heard of. And every single person in that room probably was every single person in the country that was a fan of the thing, but they were so excited. It was as if the Beatles had reformed on stage in front of them.
Yeah.
With their original drummer.
But when you find those people who are fans of that same thing that you're like just as passionate and enthusiastic about, it is really exciting. Because like you feel like you're speaking a foreign language to people who don't know what you're talking about.
Yep.
But like when you find someone who gets it, it's an amazing connection that you can make. And like people, they understand those subtle references. They understand like all of that stuff. Well, and that is fantastic.
One of my favorite people in the world is a friend of mine named Bonnie, who went to Florida State with me. And she and I still, to this day, like we rarely get to see each other in person, but we still can watch an episode of something and like, you know, Facebook each other or like text each other or like find a cool Mystery Science Theater thing and like tag the other person. It's really great to have somebody to be able to like geek out about. On the tangent of Mystery Science Theater, Jonah Ray is actually a comedian that's LA-based comedian. He does the Meltdown on Comedy Central with Jonah and Kumail, right? He has named all of his albums, all of his comedy albums, after lines from specific episodes of Mystery Science Theater. So he's so big of a fan that one of his names of his records is "This Is Some Crazy Mixed Up Plumbing," which is a line from This Island Earth, which is the theatrical release. They did a movie. They did 10 seasons, but they actually did a theatrical release of a film called This Island Earth, which also, fun fact, was the movie.
That's your favorite line.
Well, oh, hang on. No, I have a different fun fact, and then I'll tell you my favorite line. The fun fact about This Island Earth, the original film, is that it's actually the film that Drew Barrymore's character is watching in E.T. when they're in the living room scene. So the original This Island Earth, not parodied, is in E.T., and then much later, they did it and then theatrically released it. I thought that was really interesting.
That's the best 50s science fiction title ever. It's so
good. Oh my God, and it's great because it has every single stock establishing shot sound, basically, like, oh, like any very specific 50s, like they've reused the same ones. Like it's pretty great, actually. But no,
Mystery Science Theater though, and like actually kind of like the movie and just kind of want to watch the movie, because I've had that happen. Like I remember they did a Kitten with the Whip, and I was like, that's actually kind of a good movie. Like,
never, movie. Never, not once, because I feel like I'm always immediately sucked into the jokes, you know? And like, I don't know. I feel like Scott has actually witnessed me watch this show many times. So like, I feel like it's one of those things that I go into it knowing that that's what it is. But
yeah, like you know the joke.
That being said, you can find a lot of these movies online, and it had, you know, one of the reasons. Yeah, I was gonna say one of the reasons that a lot of people, you know, really liked the show is it actually boosted the sales of a lot of their really shitty movies, because like, you know, people didn't really
know
about them. Yeah.
Almost all of them
are created by somebody who has this idea and this
vision
that they're trying to realize. Like Manos' Hands of Fate, you're like,
yeah,
well, that person, they have a vision. They just, it, for whatever reason, and we can't know what it was, it is not realized correctly. And so there's this like human, like this incredibly relatable.
Oh, totally. Totally.
It's like, oh man, he just wants to make a good movie so much, but it's just not working.
But I think it's also the kind of like making fun of something that is so good natured and so within the script, oftentimes too, of the film, that it's nice because in my mind, it's very akin to like a Weird Al parody. I think it's done so often with like that, like, we just enjoy, because they enjoyed watching them and like writing the jokes for them. So I think it's interesting. But there have been a couple episodes, like there's one in particular called The Final Sacrifice, which was a film that was made in Canada. And it's actually a film about this cult. And it's, oh my God, it's one of my favorites, hands down, because there's this like really skinny, like, you know, 13-year-old protagonist kid who wears a really particularly tight red sweater, and that's like a joke that they keep coming back to, is like he's like rummaging through a trunk and they're like, I've got to find the warranty on this sweater, like, you know, every time is like, this is where I've secreted away all of my red sweaters, like, it's every, they keep going back to it. But the main actor that was like the hero of the film, the character's name is Rausdauer. His name is, like, that's his, has his last name is Rausdauer. And so, you know, throughout the film, they're like making these jokes about how Rausdauer, save the day. Like, you know, he's this action hero, like action. It was like, what was it? It was like John Actions Dauer. Like they kept like making up like alternate things for him. But the actor that played Rausdauer genuinely like tried. Like when he was making this film, he really was like, this is a cult and they're after your family. And they're, you know, he was committed and he was like, so committed.
People are committed. Like there's the only thing that I don't like in like low budget or bad movies, the thing that I really can't take
is when people don't commit.
They make reference to the fact that like, it's not good or not scary in the movie. Like in horror movies, they do that in horror movies a lot where they're like, oh, you know, that monster's fake or something.
Yeah.
I just want to go, look, if it's not scary and you know it's not scary, you make it scary.
Like, yeah.
My time.
Play into it. Act. Damn. Acting.
Like, make it better if you know it's bad.
Yeah.
Like, that's time to make it better.
Well, it was funny because he actually, the actor, I don't know his name, but they interviewed him. And at first, I think he was like sad that they like made fun of it. But then he like realized what the show was. And then, you know, but he wasn't like sad, but he was very like, I really tried. Like, I, you know, like, this was, I wanted it to be good or whatever.
It would be kind of hard to date, though. Like, I could see, like,
this one in particular, it was bad.
Did you see that movie, The Best Worst Movie?
About...
documentary about troll.
Yeah, shout out to Florida State University Student Life Cinema. We actually played that when I was in college. It was, yeah. That is the best documentary. Yeah.
Like, was trying to make a serious
also
movie and everybody was laughing at it.
Wasn't it like not originally titled Troll 2? It was supposed to be called something else and then they renamed it Troll 2 to be like a pseudo sequel or something. Poor guy.
And like, you know, I gotta say, people, fans often don't really understand what goes into making a film or what makes a film bad or good.
Yeah.
Like a lot of the movies that people say, it's so bad, you're like, you know, it actually really isn't bad. It's just, you know, it just isn't exactly what you wanted to be.
Yeah.
It's not bad.
Like, the expectations bad, that you had for it. Yeah.
So would you say that like fans, you know, when they get so involved in something, like they're kind of blinded by their love for whatever it is, you know,
and
like
sometimes that comes
they don't really,
like an assumption of ownership, which is kind of disturbing to watch sometimes, you know?
It is. Yeah. It definitely can be, because, like, you know, I definitely would say that, like, you know, Star Wars is a huge part of my life growing up, but I wouldn't say that I really own it, you know? I don't own property on it, so, like, I really
That's
can't...
That's sort of a classic example, though, Star Wars.
Yeah, and it totally is, and, like, so people understandably get upset when, like, George Lucas released the, you know, enhanced versions, quote-unquote, and they added in, you know, new things. It's like, oh, they ruined my childhood or whatever, but that's just an exaggeration, and they really don't have a right to complain because, like, that's not their property. It isn't, you know, part of, they don't own it. They didn't, you know, George Lucas didn't confirm with him because they didn't have to. He just made it.
You can be critical of something.
You can be critical, but, like, you don't, like, it's, don't get so upset about it, I guess.
It's almost like a lot of times fans get the idea that they know better than the creators of the thing that they're,
I don't know. I have to play devil's advocate, though, because only, and it's not really devil's advocate. I'm just pulling out some notable examples of some things. The re-release of Star Wars when Lucas made Greedo shoot first. That was That was a big deal because it changed everything. It changed everything because when you really watch that film and the original, the way that it's meant to be, the way that I take it, at that point in the film, we don't know Han as good or bad yet, right? We don't know as the audience what side he's on. We know him as sort of this other person. So to automatically establish Greedo as shooting first completely changes the narrative and the growth of Han, and also the emotional change that the audience feels for him. So when Lucas re-released it to automatically do that because of something that he perceived, that completely changed everything for an audience. So I agree to an extent, but I feel like there are times when liberties are taken because of new technological advances that I think for fans, it feels almost a little bit as like a, I don't want to be like it's a slap in the face because that's kind of dramatic, but it's a little bit of like a disheartening because attached to the other way we interpreted it, if that makes sense.
It was a bad decision on George Lucas's part. It wasn't a good decision, but you know, he still had the, you know, ability and right to do that. I don't think that it was a good decision at all.
Too. Like, why would you weaken your own, like, strong dramatic arc on the character of Han Solo. Why would you
perhaps he didn't really understand it all that much, but you know, whatevs. But you know,
Scott can't read texts and keep going at the same time.
I have things going on. I have like 7 different programs going on right now. Like I have the Twitch stream going on. I have the program that launched the Twitch stream, I have for the recording and all that such. So,
and I have to do laundry later. I mean, God,
I do.
Day ever done? Sorry.
Nope. It's just raining. But yeah, I love conversations like this with other fans of like whatever it could be. I've never really
stop
been
being a fan. Though, like, wait, when is a person not a fan? You know what I mean? Like, what's the dividing line between fans?
Never.
And fans?
You know, like, never. You take it with you to the grave. What defines a fan? I mean, that's a really good.
Where do you define fan?
I mean,
like I was thinking about this after our conversation. I was like, you know, I don't know what I'm really if I'm like what I'm really fanatical about is not like science fiction movies and superhero movies. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm fanatical about Werner Herzog. Like that guy. He's the only person that I was afraid to talk to. I was at a screening, and he was standing right next to me, and it would have been a perfect opportunity to talk to him. He was standing by himself. There were 5 people around, and I could have said, hey, I really like your movie. But I was too intimidated. I couldn't talk to him because I was like, it's Herzog. He's right there. It's Herzog just standing right in front of me.
Yeah. I mean,
it's
perhaps
hard.
Like a crippling fear of fanaticism might define a fan. But I think, like, you know, while we were having technical difficulties with you earlier on in the show, I think, like, I said it pretty well with, like, when you're a fan of something, you try and consume, like, every piece of media that is related to, like, whatever that is.
Yeah, that's true.
That's true.
So, like, you know, with me and my love of Mass Effect, the video game franchise, like, I have all 3 games. I have the book Expanded Universes that they've written, which were written by the head writer of Mass Effect 1 and 2, and they're very well written, and I like them a lot. But, like, I'm not that much of a reader, but, like, I went outside. I even got, like, I got the comic books and got those to take in more things of Mass Effect. Like, that I think, is fandom. I think that's what it means to be a fan. It's just, like, take in as much as possible to
and protect it though. I think that there's a you have to absorb that information and then have it. There has to be like an impact, because I think that for me, when like if someone was to like talk shit about Mystery Science Theater as if it was like a person, like that's probably the only time I would cut a bitch is like. About that. Like, my family can handle themselves. My sister is tough. Like, all my girlfriends are Beyoncés. They don't need any help. Like, but for that show, there's
bad things about Joel.
I'm like, listen, you know, and it's something that I think that maybe people who have weird niche, you know, like, fandom, I think you have that, like, wanting to protect it, because there's that self-consciousness that I sort of, like, tapped on earlier. But there's also that weird need to be like, no, it's fucking cool. Like, you don't even know. You don't even know how cool it is, because you haven't really gotten into it as much as I have. Like, there's that other level where it's...
like, okay, if I don't like something, like if I don't like some filmmaker or some genre of music or some thing,
mm-hmm.
my real honest reaction is generally, I guess that's for somebody else. It's not really for me.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of fans that are like, that thing is the worst thing, and I hate it, and I can't believe how terrible it is. And you're like, yeah, but okay, so you don't like it.
God, like, why do you gotta hate it? Yeah, that takes so much energy.
The thing is, like, there with that protectiveness of fans, like, it can be a little bit dangerous, because, you know, that creates, like, barriers and creates walls and, dare I say, even gates. But,
topical.
A little bit topical. But, like yes, there... Yeah, there is. like that sort of like exclusivity, you know, and by pushing others away, like we have to be more open and accepting. Like, oh, do you want to know about what I'm talking about? Let me show you. Or, you know, because like we have a lot to share. Like with my like fandom, I guess, of video games in general. Like, I want to show people like everything there is to offer. Like, if you're not a gamer, but you want to get into that, I'll gladly show you. But, like, other people will be like, no, you weren't there at the start. Like, that's impossible. That's impossible to do that.
You don't know.
Before they were cool.
Yeah, it's that sort of...
Before they signed to a major label, so, yeah, you know, like...
It's that sort of nonsense, and that's the kind of, like, harmful nature of fanboys. And, well, I think it's more fanboys, because, like, I think that fanboys are more defensive and fangirls are more enthusiastic to a point where it's kind of scary. So, like, I don't know. I think there's, like, a difference. But, like, I think that there's two kinds of fans, the kinds that are defensive and the kinds that are, like, enthusiastic. And, you know, like, it is kind of ours, because that's a part of us. It doesn't necessarily define us, but it's a huge chunk of who we are. We relate to these characters that don't exist. We have experienced the same stories. We've gone through, you know, all these different adventures with these characters.
I mean, so Harry Potter is a big example of that, I think, for maybe people of, like, our younger geek generation, just because I was 11 when Harry was 11, you know, like I ended up growing, I think, a little bit older than when the books came out, but I remember, you know, the final book came out when I was like 17 or 18, I want to say, like maybe 19, you know, I really kind of grew up with that. I think that there are so many things that, you know, if you're a person that maybe doesn't watch a lot of television or read a lot of books or know a lot of things, because I know that there are a lot of those people around that just don't like to ingest stuff, which is cool.
Just kind of breathing.
Yeah, you just like to eat and like sleep. Like, that's cool.
Get excited about stuff. How is that? How? What do they do?
Can I have like the hardest time.
Like, I'm super old, obviously, and I always think that about being super old. I mean, like, I'm a grown up. I have a house. I have a wife and a kid. But I always think to myself, I don't really know what grown ups do. Like, I just do.
Yeah.
Stuff I do.
Yeah.
I'm like waiting for that to happen. I theoretically am a grown up, and I'm like, meh.
This is it. That's it. This is what I'm about.
You're like, this is what it is. Yeah.
Yep. I'm cool with it. I don't know if everybody else is, but I'm all right with it.
Yeah, totally. I don't think that you should ever lose that. I don't think that you should ever lose that enthusiasm or passion. You know, I think that you should always stay true to your fandom. I think that you should always stay, you know, excited. I don't think that there's any reason.
Your cynicism. You must be cynical at all times. That's my
I feel like a healthy dose of cynicism is okay because, you know, if there's cynicism and then there is knowing when there's a punchline. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's recognizing that sometimes being cynical can be funny. I don't know. Like, right, yeah. I think there can be a balance in that.
There's a lot of stuff in the world that's like a racket. You know, like, there's a lot of things that are not what they presume to be or what, you know what I'm saying? You gotta be on the lookout for those things. You gotta know when they are. You know, like, discerning. You know what I mean?
Like undercover cops. Yeah.
It's just I was thinking about it the other day about the number of things that are just sort of like not what they seem to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Matrix.
Totally.
We're in it.
maybe we are right now. Well, we'll leave you with that. With that thought.
That yeah. Excellent wrap up.
I was going to leave him with like a crisis of existence because maybe we exist. Maybe we're just a digital program of ones and zeros. Well, think about it. Think about it. So, yeah, this has been the re-recording of episode 12.
Take deuce. Boom. Take two.
Take two. I'm not really one for do-overs, but...
Sorry.
No, it's okay.
I literally... You know? Okay, I'm going to be so honest. Last night when I figured out that it didn't record, I, like, was alone, like, in this back area where I'm recording, and I, like, was, like, ugly crying. Like, I was, like, upset because you have that moment where you're, like, wait a second, and then you push play, and just, like, a weird hollow tin noise happens, and then you have an hour and 8 minutes of nothing, and I was, like... No, hang on. And I'm like going through as if there's any, oh my God, ugly crying. That's all I'm saying. Ugly crying. But now we've re-recorded and no tears in sight. It's great. No. I think it went really well.
I think it went pretty well too. So I'm Scott Pell.
Oh yeah. Hey, they said hi.
Hey brother.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey.
All right.
Guest star Stephen Pell over there.
Should I stop recording?
No, we're not. We're not done yet. I'm Scott Pell. You're Stephen Johnson. That's been Virginia Anzengruber. This is episode 12 of Dirty Does.
Yeah.
And if you like this podcast, please don't hesitate to send us an email. We want to hear from you. Tweet at us if you like.
We
you
like
know,
internet
at,
things.
At Old Geek and Young Geek. Yeah, we're here. Check out. Well, we have a Facebook.
Check us out on Reddit.
Yeah, we got MySpace. We
I
got
just
a
keep
MySpace.
Going back to Reddit because I just.
I put us up on Reddit.
Oh, yeah. This link's gonna definitely be there. So.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but I liked Reddit before everyone was upvoting it. So.
Yeah.
My Reddit account is 7 years old. Right. So you
have
to check that out yourself.
Yeah.
I have all,
and also check out our Zanga for personal blogs. So, all right, everyone. Our GSC. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Good night, everyone. It's been fun. And if you like today's podcast, let us know. Send us a tweet at oldgeekyounggeek on Twitter, or send us an email at oldgeekyounggeek@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.